Yeah, it's quite interesting listening to a lot of people who can't see what's going to happen here. I don't think they've been down the rabbit hole long enough and haven't given it enough intellectual honesty to and time that's required to actually run through what's trying to be built here. They're just assuming too much. And with somebody the other night, I said, I asked if they accepted Bitcoin, and they said they're not a believer yet. And I thought, that's interesting, but does that mean that they want, that they do believe in fiat and the way that that works? And it was, I didn't go down the rabbit hole with them. I didn't necessarily want to open that can of worms, but it's just interesting. I think a lot of people who are coming here do believe that this can work, it will work, that we are going to build the Singapore or the Dubai of the world here. And some of the conversations that we've had is that there's a lot of hope for example, Bukele saw what happened in Bitcoin Beach, which was a community-driven circular economy grow and demonstrate that the technology worked. And then Bukele's like, damn, let's do it on a country level and prove that it works. And we believe that once he's proven it works on a country level, there's a good chance he'll take it to a group called Parlacen, which is the four Cs, the Central American countries, and try and do it on a state level or an area level. And I think that it's testament to, you know, gaining that traction, proof of concept. And I think as people see the positive effects of what's happening here, they will be more and more interested in partaking in it, because the way the current system is going, like a lot of people, we had a good comment on our YouTube the other day, and it was basically like, oh, do you think El Salvador is going to be able to survive this, you know, the global financial crisis that's most likely coming along? And I'm like, I think it's got the best chance on the planet. Like, I don't know another country that, where at the moment they've got positive GDP growth. At the moment it's averaging just over 2% per quarter, which is awesome. And, you know, other countries are all going backwards. And it's because they're attracting smart people with positive capital stashes. And then, you know, they're not attracting debt, they're attracting capital, which is awesome. And I think that trajectory is quite clear, it's quite positive. I don't know of another country, we've talked about it, it's like, where do you go? It's like all the other countries are basically on this fiat system and they're going to go backwards because that's just the way it's geared. So I think that this is unique. Mm-hmm. Like, Bitcoin has been an amazing branding exercise for the country. It's a moral flag. In my opinion, it's a moral flag that's been planted in the ground. And as long as he stays true to that ethos and that game theory, he's got the support of some really dedicated people, really committed people. Like, it takes, one of my favorite sayings is, you got to have Bukele balls to do this, right?
Right, we're live. Nikki, James, how are you guys doing? Welcome to the show.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah.
Well, I've been really looking forward to this. You guys have a fascinating story, I think, to tell. I intentionally didn't want to, you know, read anything about you, or I just wanted to be unbiased, you know, before talking to you. So, I'm, you know, the more I'm actually more curious now. So, why don't you just, you know, introduce yourself? What's your background? Where do you guys originally come from? And tell me your story. Like, how did you get, you know, your whole journey to El Salvador? Thank you.
Okay, so I'll start.
Let's start.
Yeah, I'm Nikki. I am a New Zealander, and we have lived in New Zealand pretty much all my life. Traveled a lot, but yeah, we would say COVID refugees. We made the call that we would, yeah, didn't quite like what was happening in New Zealand, and New Zealand pretty much pushed us away, and El Salvador pretty much pulled us. Mm. But James will go into more detail definitely on that one. So yeah.
We both traveled a lot, and we lived in New Zealand. We were living in New Zealand. Our life was great. It was excellent. And obviously with COVID, relationships changed. The environment changed. The social environment changed. And as Nikki mentioned, we were pushed out of all of our activities. So we had a night school and we had sports activities, we had social activities, which was dancing, and we were told that we weren't welcome to come in unless we basically complied with what was happening. And so that was the push factor, where we were like, oh, this is, it's become uncomfortable in our social circles and in our, just our daily lives. And then we saw, I've been involved in Bitcoin for a long time, and I've long awaited the day where a country would adopt Bitcoin. And that day came while we were in a lockdown just over a year ago now, coming up 18 months. But that day came. And when Nikki and I met, she was like, oh, what are you into, James? And I'm like, Bitcoin. And we, when we started talking about what was actually happening in New Zealand, we looked at options of places to perhaps live a different life.
Yeah.
And El Salvador had dropped all of its COVID restrictions. And it was also the first country in the world to adopt Bitcoin. And we were like, man, that might be a really interesting adventure.
Yeah.
This had you guys been traveling before, like before all this, you know, this shit happened, and with all this, you know, COVID, had you been like in the, either individually or together, like traveling around the world, have been around, you know, a lot?
Travel a lot. Had not really traveled in any third world country, so.
Mm.
So never been to Latin America before, never been to South America before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd been to Bali once, but that was all. And so, yeah, so, I mean, it was quite a shock, culture shock, coming to El Salvador.
It was actually very common for a lot of New Zealanders during our, especially our generation, growing up, to have what was called an OE, or an overseas experience. So a lot of New Zealanders, you'd finish school or university, you'd save up some money for a year or two, and then you'd go overseas for anywhere from 1 to 5 years. That was quite common. And I was lucky enough to have a family, like my family business was overseas. So I did personal traveling. I got to go overseas for the family business. And then again, I hadn't really lived in any third world countries. I'd been privileged enough to go to all the nice ones. And so coming to El Salvador was something we weren't experienced with, but it wasn't something we were sort of afraid of in terms of travel experience.
How does it feel like to be there, to live there? Like, I mean, this is that the feeling, like you are like established now? Do you feel established over there? Like, what is the like overall perception and feeling?
So I want to preface it with, we have no regrets.
Yeah.
That, I think that's the best way to explain it. And then in terms of feeling.
We came with no expectations because we had no idea what we were coming to. Okay, so we came with no expectations, and we definitely have no regrets coming over here. We're wanting to set up a home here. We're wanting to create a lifestyle here. There's no doubt about that. It's not easy. I mean, I've had my ups and downs this last couple of weeks, and it's, you know, we have our moments. There's no doubt about that. You know, there's certain... just ease of living in a first world country that you don't have here, but you know, you go through them and you get more and more used to it. You know, we will now go down to the Mercados, what used to be noisy, scary, bustly, and now it's just the norm.
Yeah.
So we're used to it, and we I suppose it's one of those things that we adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's colourful, it's fun. I mean, it's smelly, but it's we make some neat connections. We communicate. We buy our fruit and veggies there every week,
mm-hmm.
and it's a fun morning.
Yeah,
And it definitely like exceeded your expectations. Like, you know, the whatever expectations you had before emigrating, like is that like wholly different or?
I think we were actually quite lucky in the way we did it. So when we arrived, we got shocked. We didn't have anybody that we knew here beforehand, other than we'd met a random lady in our hometown who was the only Salvadoran. And she was like, oh, I got some friends who have a little apartment in the middle of the city that you can go and rent. So we pre-booked that for a month. And when we arrived, it was a great experience. It was very simple living.
Yeah.
And it shocked us a little bit because it wasn't something we weren't expecting that when we arrived. We were under the impression it might be a little bit different. And it was good though. Mm. Like we're looking back at it, it's like it's a treasure of an experience instead of coming here and having all of the luxuries straight up front. Mm. And we ended up in this, I guess it's probably quite a common situation for a lot of people living in El Salvador. And then there was the high walls, the razor wire, the guys with shotguns. But by the end of the first week, we were quite comfortable with talking to the guys with shotguns outside the supermarket. And it was a fun experience to then ending up here where we are now. And we feel very established and privileged with where we are now.
And you feel safe, right?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you also have the perception that people who either come for as a tourist, short-term, long-term, how do you perceive them? Do you think they feel, you know, or it exceeds their expectations, you know, whatever, you know, concerned like safety or security or whatever, comfort?
I think most people who come here find that they do end up going to the places that tourists go. And so you do feel safe in those areas. It's definitely different. You know, you're going and say, if you looked at the Coin Beach, El Zonte, you know, the road is pothole, it's muddy, it's dirty, it's a high walls, razor wire, you can't really see anything. And so that's quite a shock. If you're coming from Europe or a first world country to come in here and you haven't experienced that before, it can be quite a shock. But it is safe, you know. Yeah, we go there every Thursday night to go dancing and don't think anything about walking those streets in El Zonte.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely the common tourist areas are relatively safe. Mm. Like any city in the world, even New Zealand, you have to take a certain amount of common sense as to where you go and what times you go and things you might do that might attract attention. So, I mean, that's very common, but we speak to a lot of foreigners and Salvadorans who say things have changed a lot, even in the last 12 months. But we were speaking to a guy yesterday who's a foreigner who's been here before all of this stuff was happening. And he's saying the last 3 years, wow, the changes that have happened and how he feels a lot safer. He didn't say that he felt unsafe beforehand, but there was always that in the back of his mind. Like he would hear noises or something and he might be like, oh, do I need to be aware? But I think he feels even safer now.
Yeah, he feels a lot more at ease. Yeah, I think is a big one. I think for foreigners coming in, one thing, you know, again, if they haven't traveled to third world countries, you know, infrastructure's not in place like it is in the Western world. And so, you know, rubbish collections may not happen. And so, you know, it's nothing to throw a plastic bottle out of your window when you're driving along in a car, you know, to see. And so, you know, you see a lot of that sort of thing. And that's, you know, but Bukele is, you know, starting a big campaign on cleaning that up, which is amazing. So definitely things are getting cleaned up along that and along those lines as well. But it all takes time. It can't happen overnight. You just need someone in there to go, hey, this is not how we want to live. We want to take pride in our country. So let's start taking pride. And it's going to be a generational change to actually have that happen.
There's generational trauma and we can see that and we appreciate that and we're patient with it. Mm. And we also see that there's a lot of people who are motivated to live into a brighter future, which is inspiring for us.
Yeah.
So do you see if, with your own eyes, the transformation is amazing. The development's been going on the last few, even today with the Legislative Assembly approving the law, and it's going to be published and becoming law, and then eventually the Bitcoin bonds finally going to be issued. And then the other thing was like the extension of the tourist visa.
Yeah.
Is that like, talk about it a little bit? Like, what's the background of this extension of the...
I want to give like my opinion, my 10 Satoshis. I'm just guessing what's happening here. But when we came in, we were told, oh, yeah, you can apply for your residency. In the process, you'll probably need to apply for a visitor visa extension. And apparently it's incredibly common. And it's very simple. It costs, I think, like $25 or something. And when I saw the rumor starting to happen, and then I saw the tweet from Bukele this morning, I was like, oh, wow, I think I know what this is. Mm-hmm. And there's also been chatter this week on Twitter about Canada in particular, perhaps maybe not being happy about a lot of people immigrating, and they might be applying pressure here. That's just hearsay. I don't know anything. But what I'm seeing is the more pressure that perhaps comes in from the outside, Bukele's going to capitalize on that and make it easier for people. So I think he's showing in good faith, I want to make it easier for people to come here. And the process, he's removing roadblocks. So I think that 30-day, it's just an added administration on their side and our side, which he's pulled out and said, if you can get your residency done in the first 6 months, I'd love to have you. And I'm going to remove the hassle of getting a police check. And
you still may have to do the police check.
Oh yeah, the police check was for the residency.
Yeah.
So he's removing the hassle of spending a day to basically go and get the visa extension.
Or to leave the country and come back in again.
Yeah.
So he's creating it so it's a lot more easier, because it is quite hard, you know, to get your residency if you haven't got all your documents in order in that first 90 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's a huge reduction in bureaucracy and, you know, complications like headache, right? I mean, there's no headache, right? With going through all these processes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I think it's a sign that he's leaning into encouraging people. This is my personal opinion and how I feel about what's happening, but I've had a few people contact me this morning and like, did he just do that? Like, is that real? What documents do I need to bring again? That's good.
You know, you were talking about New Zealand, and the family I talked to, you know, who are also in El Salvador in the previous episode. I mentioned also amongst Canada. I think I mentioned New Zealand, Australia. I was like, it shocked me. I mean, I'm still intrigued that, because I talked to my girlfriend and she says it's mind-boggling. Countries like Australia, New Zealand, Canada, always, you know, in our perception, you know, because we've never been there. Yeah. I mean, I've never been there in either one of those countries. And I just thought, you know, these would be the countries that I would, years ago, you know, like to emigrate to, you know, to establish oneself. If something's up and you want to maybe taste, you know, freedom and be free and have a wonderful life. But does that shock you? I mean, or when was the moment it really like made you conscious of, holy shit, like where am I living in? You know, like, I mean, this whole global thing is unraveling at a rate that's unfathomable. But what's your take on that?
Yes and no. There's two that shock me.
Go ahead. James has been down the rabbit hole a lot longer than I have. For me, New Zealand's stunning. It's an incredible country. You have got so many varieties of places to live. You know, you can go really remote and be away from it all, or you can have that whole city vibe. You can go up to mountains. You can be in beautiful national parks and the sea and all that sort of stuff. It is absolutely stunning. I'm going to say, you know, the COVID pandemic and what our government did was the start of my eyes really opening up and going, this is absolutely crazy and it should not be like this, you know. So that's really for me when since being here and since looking into more, I know realistically it's happened prior to that, but for my personal opinion, it sort of started then, because that's when all of a sudden there was things that I had every right to be able to do and I wasn't able to go and do them, like simple things like going and getting your hair cut, you know, going and having a coffee with your friends. You weren't allowed to go and do those national parks. And so that's, for me was really when it started.
Yeah.
But I know you'll have.
I guess, like, New Zealand is beautiful, and we didn't leave because we didn't like the lifestyle. It was more to do with our why. So why were we staying and why might we go somewhere else? And the relationships, I'll speak for myself, the relationships that I had with a lot of people changed. And before I was the crazy Bitcoiner, but now I was also the crazy Bitcoiner who chooses not to get experimental vaccinations and stuff like that. And so it isolates you a bit more. And I guess the surprising thing for me, so it wasn't really surprising that maybe New Zealand got on board with all of this and it came along. What surprised me more was the number of people who didn't stand up to say something. That's what surprised me. And then to really rub salt into the wound, the number of people who wanted to write off people who stood up and said something. I'm like, whoa, hang on. That's not the New Zealand I grew up in. Like, we're a country of innovation and we allow people to talk about ideas and different things. And all of a sudden, anybody who wants to talk about a different idea is now like this crazy person. That was the piece that really, really shocked me, that such a large portion of the population wanted to shut down that conversation. And I'm like, something's shifted and I'm not like, what are my options here? That was sort of what shocked me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I mean, this is what's really still mind-boggling and shocking to us. I mean, even our environment, you know people, I know, we all know people. And you know, I think even Samson, you know Samson Mao from Gen3, he said in an interview, it's like, that's what's, so crazy is that, I think he said something like 50% of, because he's from Canada, he said 50% of Canada's people support these, measures and are in support of all these tyrannical, dictatorial. Sometimes I have no words for that, but would you still, I mean, the thing is that a lot of people now, in the face of all the evidence of the damages that you see, the deaths, the consequential damages, everything is coming out to the surface. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are trying to save face, or I don't know, they're in such a psychological dilemma. They're trying to, with their cognitive dissonance, to rationalize everything, Are you still having some kind of discussions or contact with other people in New Zealand? Do they have some people change their perspective? Maybe they've admitted to themselves,
So there's actually a really good clip on Twitter this morning from the Joe Rogan podcast, and they're talking about forgiving people, and that's okay. This is to do with the relationships generally that we're building. And so, yes, I mean, I can forgive those people. What's challenging and what's hard is that those people that judged us, like, sure, I can forgive them and just be like, okay, but you're right. There's some sort of ego investment that they're holding on to, where people in New Zealand have been like, oh, everything's back to normal now. Like, you can come home. And it's like, no, our relationship and the way we see the world is forever different. Mm. It's like the line has been drawn, and I forgive you, but at the same time, I now know your true mask, your true colors, the true way you're going to behave when you're put under pressure. Mm. And so going back to the way things were isn't really an option for us anymore, when we've actually found a tribe of people who believe in more of the values that we believe in, which is that we'll speak our truths more and we'll stand up when things aren't right. If someone's doing something we don't agree with, we're free to talk about it and have a discussion. As we're in New Zealand, that was taken off the table. So, and they're not willing to admit that it happened or put it back on the table. So I think that answers it.
Well said. So do you think that, let's go back to El Salvador. I mean, do you think that now that do you feel like you're permanently like El Salvador? Because this is where the discussions we've had with girlfriend, with other people who are actually seeking also, to exit country at that time, when Austria, totally crazy, trying to enforce the vaccination with a high monetary penalties, not maybe with jail. I think it was in discussion. I mean, it's totally crazy if I just think about it. But anyway, and we were like, Bukele and his team, they are trustworthy. And, I also talked with Tom and Emily about this. Like, do you feel, because trust, is the essence of any relationship. And I think trust is of a huge problem, I think, in our society, in our civilization. And I'm not talking about like trust minimization or trustlessness in Bitcoin, or like trust in relationships, right? any kind of relationships, whether it's small, you know, within you or bigger. Do you feel like, is it, when you think about it, when you go deep inside, is that something where you feel like El Salvador could not only be the first one, but let's say one of the very first and few countries where we, I'm saying we, you know, the people who are critical, who just want to, you know, be free and have property rights and you know, freedom of speech and not being enforced with anything. Do you feel like you can live there and witness a truly prosperous society evolving in El Salvador, which we had never maybe had before in human history? Is that something, like, I know it sounds a little bit abstract, but do you know where I'm going with this? Like, because a lot of people, I think, thinking, okay, what if we really pack our stuff, go to El Salvador, and then everything changes again? You know, like, should we buy some property? Should we just, you know, rent temporarily? All these kind of decisions.
Can I preface it?
You can.
I'm going to keep it short. So I'm going to preface this with a personal philosophy, which is I don't recommend anyone buys Bitcoin. So when people come and ask me, should I buy Bitcoin? I'm like, no. You need to make that personal decision. And that also applies to, should you move to El Salvador? No. You need to do it. You need to know your why. And in your heart, you'll know what to do.
Mm. Yeah. And I agree with that. When it comes to that trust, and I'm talking personally here, not, you know, for anybody else as well. You know, Bukele was extremely tough when COVID first came out. He was, you know, people were getting arrested for being outside. He was really, really tough. And he changed. And he changed when, we have heard it was when Conference 2021 came in and he wasn't getting, you know, the people weren't coming to the Bitcoin conference here. And he was told, well, you need to stop all the mandates that you have so people will come. And so he did. And then he promoted the healthy lifestyle. He gave the kits with ivermectin and the vitamins that you need and the Panadol and talked about the importance of exercise and things. So maybe there was a reason why he was being tough. We don't know, you know, but he was extremely tough. And we have had some people come to us and say, you know, do you realize how tough he was and that he could just change like that? I don't believe he will now. That's my personal choice, or my personal opinion, should I say. I think that, you know, he is really opening the doors. He's wanting people. He's wanting Bitcoiners to come in here. He's wanting people to come and really boost the economy and start creating a lifestyle here. If he did do those changes, then he's going to see a mass exodus. And he's, you know, if he wants to create the El Salvador he wants to create, then he's not going to be able to change because we will all leave. Well, don't know where we'll go. You know what I mean? Hey.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And Nikki's talking about the game theory behind Bitcoin. And that is, I think that's a very strong decision driver, moral, you know, it's like a moral compass. And I think that was a large part of the Conference 21 thing, which was they realized, like, I wasn't going to get on a plane because and go to a country that was going to reject me because I needed to have a vaccination. It just wasn't going to happen. So no way I was going anywhere until I had a path that would allow me. And so I think he's realized that the game theory of Bitcoin is that you've got these people who are sovereign in their thinking, first principles, and they're going to, you know, they're going to honor those things first. I'm not going to start jeopardizing those things now. I put in too much effort. And we really both want to believe that, yes, it will continue down that path. Now, the thing that we could start talking about is you could go down the what ifs, and there's a whole heap of what ifs, such as, I mean, things that you don't want to happen happening, which would be that Bukele disappears for unknown reasons. That would be the worst case scenario. And that is unfortunately out of his control. So yeah, we do consider what would happen. And I think we need to, because we need to take responsibility for if things did go wrong. right. or changed drastically, what would we do?
Mm. You know, it's funny because that's a typical, you know, answer. I mean, I think even Tom and Emily said this, that, you know, we don't trust politicians. And I mean, at the end of the day, is Bukele a politician, or is he maybe could be the first, you know, ethical, a politician who has really a mission, a vision, values, principles, you know? And maybe he's just in disguise of a politician. I don't know. You know, he's not a prophet. You know, he's not a sacrosanct, you know, man or whatever. But this is the reason I'm asking, because from my feeling, yeah, I think I can trust him. I have the feeling if we were there, or, you know, because I've never met him, I've never just read and maybe see some interviews with him, but he makes a really authentic, ethical, you know, let's say ethos-based impression upon me. What's your take on that?
I agree. So if you go back to you mentioned about maybe an experiment like this hasn't been tried before. I actually wonder, I would like to reference the United States of America, which potentially was sold as the land of the free, which maybe an experiment like this has been tried before. And they went through a lot of fiat currency evolutions to try and sort out how the land of the free should be structured. And after World War II, there was basically, oh, here's a gold standard, that's how we're going to do it. And then they came off it, and then things have unraveled the way they've unraveled. And I think that as long as Bitcoiners can maintain self-sovereignty and train other people and distribute that wealth in another way and keep the network as strong as possible, I think that El Salvador has a really good chance to continue along this path. And maybe other countries may also choose to follow a path like this if you can demonstrate that the people that are being attracted are going to build a different economy, basically, and a different social standard which people live by because of the sound or hard money principle that you might use.
Yeah, that's my line of thought too. I think, you know, once people and the society that are evolving, would it be, you know, I think I'm pretty convinced that it'll take, I think it will accelerate, this process will accelerate in an unexpected fashion. Would it be, whether we're talking about Bitcoin cities, circular economies, you know, you've heard of free private cities, you know, I know all these people, you know, there's a lot of, you know, intellectual philosophical talk, which I think it's a little bit detached sometimes from the practical reality, but I do believe it's out of necessity, first of all, and then people are going to taste freedom for the first time. And why should they go back, you know, to this, you know, dystopian world, which we're already living in more or less, you know, but they're trying, you know, with all these non-elected institutions or entities or whatever you want to call them. I mean, it's, I think it, they will, it will evolve. I think it will just evolve and then it will take a sort of a S-curvature. From, you know, in terms of speed of evolution or development. I'm sure you've been into all kinds of rabbit holes. If you zoom out a little bit, what would you say? What do you think are the necessary conditions to be fulfilled, or infrastructures, or, you know, for whatever, transportation, efficiency, health, medicine, communication, the well-being, you know, children, you know, because we are a huge fan, for example, homeschooling. I mean, this is the future, you know. We're talking about the future that is like unfolding in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm. What's your general like thoughts on that?
It's a balancing act. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things. One, I'd love to see more Bitcoin-first infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And the best and foremost example that I have is, for example, we want to pay our electricity bill using Bitcoin, but the local electricity company that supplies us, they won't accept Bitcoin directly, and they've actually basically requested that we are unable to use third-party services to use Bitcoin to pay our electricity bill as well. And it's like, well, you know, energy is a really important part of life. And so that's really highlighted the fact that there's opportunity here for businesses to come in. And I believe Bukele wants to solve it with things like the geoelectricity and the hydroelectricity. But he's obviously going to need to have a company that distributes that energy over the lines and is a Bitcoin first ethos company. And we would love to see more food go down that path as well. So just in securing the basics, such as shelter and energy, transportation and food and medical and schooling, we would love to see more Bitcoin first things like that. We're already seeing it in the school system. They're reforming the school system right now, and they're putting in a whole heap of new education programs, and part of it is financial education, and in that they are including parts of the curriculum from My First Bitcoin, which will teach people about money and teach them how the Bitcoin network works. And then I just wanted to cover that a lot of that stuff also starts to bring in regulation, and regulation starts to become a double-edged sword, and the regulation process is the thing that can often allow tyrannical behavior. And it was funny because we're having a bit of a joke yesterday about driver's licenses. And we understand that it's good to have people who are qualified to drive, but at the same time, for example, here, the driving is quite, people would say it's erratic and dangerous. And it's because there's not a lot of police like monitoring it and cracking down on it and things like that. But I just have to be really conscious of what's happening and know that around the next corner, there could be a dude on the wrong side of the road. I have to be very aware of that. As we're in New Zealand, it's gone to the other extreme, which is like the police now use things like the speeding and bits and pieces to really crack down and control people in a lot of ways. And they even find gray areas where you're allowed to pass another vehicle, but it has to be under all of these certain conditions. And a police officer can pull you over for almost anything now and use it against you, which is the reason I use that example is that the path of regulation can be challenging, and I'm not sure how they're going to deal with it here in El Salvador, but a lot of people are talking about less laws being best or better or easier to manage and letting go of old laws. That's going to be a really tricky experiment, but it's a generational thing, and I think it's a really interesting one to be part of because the other way we've seen where it goes again.
Then when you sort of you're talking about homeschooling and schooling and things, and I mean we don't have children here, but there are a lot of families coming in who do homeschool, and I think that to get a curriculum happening, you know, for the way you want to bring your children up, the way you want to teach them, educate them, would be great. But because there's so many people coming in, you could definitely start a community with that.
We're already seeing them.
Yeah.
Like we know two or three groups of people that are homeschooling, and it doesn't appear to be a regulation. One family said that you have to be registered in Canada to homeschool your own children. I'm not exactly sure what the laws are, but I don't believe that's required here. And that's that slippery slope of regulation. And I don't know. It'd be great. Yeah. It's a huge opportunity. That's how I see it. And that's how I want to see it. I don't see these things as a bad thing. I don't see the lack of regulation as a bad thing here. I see it as an opportunity. I believe that the Bitcoin ethos will encourage people to be incentivized to do things better, because my personal perspective is that the fiat system encourages people to take shortcuts and do things immorally, as where the Bitcoin system is going to encourage people to do things the right way and with a moral standing.
Wow, beautifully said. Okay, is there anything else you want to share, like your thoughts on, you know, I mean, El Salvador is on its way to become, could it be like the first debt-free nation state? Is that what it's all about, right? The Bitcoin bonds, is that the ultimate goal, right? To become first of all, independent and, you know, free from the shackles of slavery of the IMF, World Bank, and the central banking system. But, you know, you talked about sound money, you know, rooted in Bitcoin. I mean, we have now the hardest, scarcest money ever, you know, immutable, unconfiscatable, every property you can think of. I mean, so the root is like the healthiest we can ever imagine. And this is why, you know, I'm trying to like to spin it a little bit into different rabbit holes with you guys. Like, and I don't see it even, you know, so far-fetched, like in 30, 50 years. I see like in maybe 10, maximum 15 years, I think there's going to be a very fast, you know, as Parker Lewis said, gradually and suddenly, a huge, you know, evolution in every direction. Maybe even, you know, detachment from the patent system. You know what I'm like talking about? Like finally, no more, you know, restrictions in development, innovation, technology. I mean, all these things that we could have had, you know, in the last whatever 50, 100 years. So for the first time, we could have a civilization in El Salvador, a society, an infrastructure that could supersede anything we could have ever dreamt of. Even if it sounds a little bit, I know, utopian or sci-fi, but this is what I'm convinced of. This is what I'm asking you. Like, where do you see El Salvadorians, people and the people that are coming back, the expats, the resources, the capital, the talents, the skills, the inventors, the engineers, everybody that you can think of, you know?
With the people that have been reaching out to us and the people that we've met so far in El Salvador, the knowledge, the intelligence, the skills are incredible. You know, you've got people who have got potential to start up some amazing businesses, already have amazing businesses, who are really trying to get in. And El Salvador feels like it is the place to come to create. And where in other countries things are becoming stifled because of all the rules and regulations, you've stopped learning how to, you know, use your creative brain, and because you have to, you know, you're sort of led down a different path. Here it feels like it's a blank canvas, and you have the ability to actually come here and really create.
Yeah, for sure. I had one of my thoughts there, and I've let it go while I was listening to what you were saying there. But I really wanted that one too.
But is it a melting pot? Let me ask you something different. Do you feel like this is like the first true? Because I always thought, you know, New York, or, you know, cities like New York could be like the true melting pot where all kinds of people come together, you know, peacefully. They cooperate with one another. They talk to one another. They interact with one another. They develop and evolve with one another. Would you see that? Like,
there's definitely people making connections. People are making connections, and for business opportunities and ideas and concepts. So there's all sorts of different pockets, and you relate to different people, and people are definitely coming in together who have never met each other. They might live on completely different sides of the world, and they're going, wow, we can go down this path, you know, or we could go down that path. So there's definitely that happening.
Yeah. And I think the Bitcoin bond thing is interesting. I don't think they'd be necessarily debt free, because what they're doing is they're crowdsourcing the debt effectively. And I think it's a really interesting concept. And a lot of people are sort of like, oh, if the Bitcoin City is tax free, you know, it won't work. And how does it work? Like, where are you stealing the money from? And it's not that it's tax free, it's that the tax incentive structure is different. And instead of trying to tax the individual on all sorts of crazy little things, they're just going, right, where is the main point of taxation, which is commerce. And that's the easiest place to police, because you've got businesses where you can identify them and do it. And I'm happy to, like, I'm not against taxes. I know that things have to be paid for. Like, I know a road has to be paid for somehow. So it's quite interesting listening to a lot of people who can't see what's going to happen here. I don't think they've been down the rabbit hole long enough and haven't given it enough intellectual honesty to in time that's required to actually run through what's trying to be built here. They're just assuming too much. And with somebody the other night, I said, I asked if they accepted Bitcoin, and they said they're not a believer yet. And I thought, that's interesting. But does that mean that they do believe in fiat and the way that works? I didn't go down the rabbit hole with them. I didn't necessarily want to open that can of worms, but it's just interesting. I think a lot of people who are coming here do believe that this can work, it will work, that we are going to build the Singapore or the Dubai of the world here, And some of the conversations that we've had is that there's a lot of hope for example, Bukele saw what happened in Bitcoin Beach, which was a community-driven circular economy grow and demonstrate that the technology worked. And then Bukele's like, damn, let's do it on a country level and prove that it works. And we believe that once he's proven it works on a country level, there's a good chance he'll take it to a group called Parlacen, which is the four Cs, the Central American countries, and try and do it on a state level or an area level. And I think that it's testament to, you know, gaining that traction, proof of concept. And I think as people see the positive effects of what's happening here, they will be more and more interested in partaking in it, because the way the current system is going, like a lot of people, we had a good comment on our YouTube the other day, and it was basically like, oh, do you think El Salvador is going to be able to survive this, you know, the global financial crisis that's most likely coming along? And I'm like, I think it's got the best chance on the planet. Like, I don't know another country that where at the moment they've got positive GDP growth. At the moment, it's averaging just over 2% per quarter, which is awesome. And, you know, other countries are all going backwards. And it's because they're attracting smart people with positive capital stashes. And then, you know, they're not attracting debt, they're attracting capital, which is awesome. And I think that trajectory is quite clear. It's quite positive. I don't know of another country. We've talked about it. It's like, where do you go? It's like all the other countries are basically on this fiat system and they're going to go backwards because that's just the way it's geared. So I think that this is unique. Mm-hmm. Like Bitcoin has been an amazing branding exercise for the country. It's a moral flag. In my opinion, it's a moral flag that's been planted in the ground. And as long as he stays true to that ethos and that game theory, he's got the support of some really dedicated people, really committed people. Like it takes, one of my favorite sayings is you've got to have Bukele balls to do this, right? Like it's a big game plan.
Yeah, you got to give it to them. Yeah, you got to give it to him.
Yeah.
I mean, he really deserves the credit. I mean, sometimes I don't want to call it paranoid, but or too much, but it's like, is he still alive? Seriously? I mean, you know, like he's like against, like, is he, or is he just, because, you know, there's all kinds of theories and real conspiracy theories. Like, is it being put into place, you know, just as an experiment in case, you know, everything else fails. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy theories out there, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you gotta, you know, rely upon your logic, your rational thinking, your intuition, your instincts, your feelings, emotions, and perception, right? Holistically.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, do you think that I lost. I think I was a little bit too deep into the rabbit hole, but do you think that El Salvador is going to be, no, I lost it. There was a specific question I was going to ask you. I'm sorry
it's
about
okay.
that.
No, it's okay. While you're thinking about it, I remembered something I wanted to say earlier. So, the Tucker Carlson interview, Bukele said something on there that I thought was really important. And so Carlson also sort of suggested maybe you should be under attack. And he's like, I put my truth on the table. He's not hiding his truth anywhere.
Wow.
He's speaking his truth and he's acting as he speaks. And he said, that is my greatest defense in regard to what I am doing. It's really hard to come at me when I say this and I do this. And that's one of the things that we've really noticed here is like we've made great friends with some locals here, had them around for a barbecue recently. And we talked about the new highway that connects the city and the beach. And they were like, we don't care what he might be doing in the background. He said he was going to finish the road. He finished the road. The money was spent. It wasn't stolen and the road never finished. He delivered. And Bukele appears to have this very strong, I'm going to tell you about it after I've delivered it. We're aware that there's a hydro plant and a geothermal plant being built, but you don't hear about it in the news. You see the odd like sneak peek, but he's not going to talk about it until it's done. And he's going to be like, look, I built this for the people.
Amazing. Yeah. He really delivers, huh? So he under promises, but then over delivers, right?
Yeah.
Or at least not so conspicuously. Yeah.
That's his intent. Yeah. And I think
I got the question because I was thinking about Jeff Booth, because I think he's, you know, in his talks, and you know Jeff Booth, have you read his book?
We actually got to meet him last year, which was
exactly
awesome.
I mean, I just love Jeff Booth because he really, I think he's trying to hammer into the brains of people, like, hey guys, you know, you are thinking within this. It's really hard because we've been so brainwashed, so indoctrinated. So, you know, I think only children can really do this, like think outside the box, like, you know, like that. And it's, and you were talking, you know, about the conditions, the structures that necessary, and, you know, and about taxes, I think. Yeah, we were talking about taxes, and I was thinking, and you got the money, you know, you got the hardest scarcest money. And I think we can't even imagine what it is, what it would be like to live in a with a deflationary money, that it increases exponentially once, you know, we think in purchasing power, unit of account, and then everything, you know, other countries come and interact, commerce, trade, whatever, you know, we interact with one another, right? So you're going to have for the first time, like shooting through the roof, you know, exponential purchasing power. So this is how things are going to be financed. And I think this is something even I have some difficulty with imagining it, right? Or comprehending it. But what do you think? Is that a valid argument?
I think it's a very, I think it's a great thinking point. And because there's a lot of people who are just straight off the bat, it can't work, it's impossible. And it's like, well, once upon a time, going to the moon was impossible. And, you know, here we are building a rocket ship to Mars and electric self-driving cars and AI. Like, impossible is not a good argument. I think that it's a great experiment to try. And if you've got people who are keen to do it, let's do it. I mean, in terms of the technology of the monetary system that's being used, it's fantastic. And why not give it a go? And so one of my interesting things is that a lot of people say, oh, are you against CBDCs? And I'm like, no, if people want to sign up for CBDCs, great, go for it. Good luck, have fun. But in response, I want the opportunity to use something else. And that's just how I see free speech. It's like, you can speak using a CBDC if you want, and I'll speak using Bitcoin if I want. That's how freedom of speech is meant to work. And I think that I think it's great that El Salvador is doing this, and I'd love the world to let it play out and give it a go with an open mind. But I know that's going to be a challenge.
So we are, we're totally aligned, right? So it's about really free choice, real free market, because we don't have that. I mean, in this world we're living in, it's not real capitalism. There's no real free market, no real free choices. We are, you know, ruled and governed and dictated by a bunch of, I don't know, whatever, you know, sociopaths, psychopaths. The parasites, but some call them elites. So I think we should really stick to parasitic institutions. So before we wrap up here, is there anything like you really want to share with my listeners that we haven't talked about that and it should be really emphasized?
Yes.
Please.
I assume that the majority of your users are Bitcoin, at least know what Bitcoin is. And our mission here is basically to encourage the use of the Lightning Network. And there's a number of reasons for that. And it's because the more capital that's locked up in the Lightning Network, the less Bitcoin are locked up on exchanges, which means there's less leverage to mess with the value. Using Lightning once you get started, it's a simple and fun process. And it also encourages the network to grow. It encourages e-commerce and a lot of positive things to happen. So if people have never used a Lightning wallet, go and download something that's free and easy. There's no KYC, and somehow get Satoshis on it. Ask someone you know.
Name the wallets, because Beautyon, you know, you probably know him from Twitter. He always says, you know, why didn't you guys, you know, say it, you know. Right. name the wallets, please.
So I'm not favoring any of them here. They've all got different selling points. So I'll start with Bitcoin Beach, because we're in El Salvador. And the reason that we like to talk about Bitcoin Beach a lot is because they're actually feature rich in their service. Even though it's a service that's custodial, that they hold your Bitcoin. If they turn the servers off, you've lost it. The features on Bitcoin Beach are awesome. And you have this new stable sats, which allows you to hold value in your Bitcoin if you want. It's experimental, but it's interesting. Then we love things like Wallet of Satoshi, which is a really fast, low friction experience. Basically, you download the wallet and get money on it. So, well, this value on it super fast. We use that for onboarding all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you can go to things like Phoenix, Breeze, and Moon, which all three are self-custody wallets, and which means that if they turn the servers off, you can recover your funds again. These are great wallets. These are ones that we use all the time. And there's other ones out there as well, but we don't use them as much. Blue Wallet, we use Blue Wallet a lot, yeah. Which is really good as well, because they have Bitcoin and Lightning built in, and you can create little pots of different value in there, which is cool.
And I think especially for things like Bitcoin Beach, ones where they're not self-custodial, it's really important that they realize that it's they're spending money they have on it, you know, so not, you know, they don't take their savings to the grocery store, you know, they just take this, you know, their spending wallet. And that's sort of something for a lot of people, it takes a while for them to understand that, but it is, it's their one for their Lightning transactions, the ones that they're buying, purchasing.
I want to attack the people who are sitting there going, attack's probably not the right word, but I'd like to raise the point that a lot of people bring up, which is, I only HODL, like you can't spend your Bitcoin. And it's like, well, that's not going to help your HODL increase in value. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of HODLing and saving, but at the same time, your spending habits, you're going to spend money on your phone bill, on your internet, on whatever, groceries anyway. So why not buy Bitcoin, spend it on the food, buy 10% more than you need and put 10% into savings. Mm-hmm. And when you use services like BitRefill, you can then get sats back as well. So you actually save a little bit on your normal spending. So you can be a store of value HODLer without any problems, and without jeopardizing that, you can move into supporting the network by learning and using Lightning and spreading the good word. And that's the main thing that we believe is important, is Lightning adoption. If you can't come to El Salvador and you want to help, Lightning adoption.
Yeah.
That is the best thing that anybody can do right now.
Excellent advice. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Because I think, you know, all these wallets that you, I would also call them like ethical wallets or non-custodial and easy, user-friendly, you know, that you can onboard noobs or, you know, anybody that has like even anybody who would hate Bitcoin, it just you make it simple and easy. And I think, you know, this onboarding process, and this is what I'm saying, you know, it's like even in Austria, where I'm like, there's one guy at the corner down there, because I'm, you know, we're on the countryside up on the hill, and there's a guy down there on the street, on the main street, who changes the tires, you know, of our cars. And that's the only guy who actually accepts Bitcoin, you know. And I'm like, hey, listen, we should, you know, get together with other merchants, you know, other people in commerce, and really, you know, educate them and enlighten them and give them the tools, right? Because we need, preparation is everything. So yeah, you said something very important, you know. We need as a medium exchange in order to, you know, go through this process until we have like super hyper Bitcoinization and we think in purchasing power and everything, you know, it's just self-explanatory. It's fun to use.
It's so quick and so instant. And when people get in their minds that there's no third party, you know, it's like just like handing cash over.
Yeah.
It's really great.
One of our favorite things, and we go into every store we go to, we're like, pagar con Bitcoin por favor, can we pay with Bitcoin please? And a lot of it just becomes like, we do it in a fun way, and we have a joke about it, and a lot of people, they're like, no, and we'll try and see if they've got a wallet so we can tip them extra, because we'll pay them cash. But it's like, well, if you've got a wallet, we'll give you money so you can have the experience. And it's good for our Spanish practice, it's good for awareness, and I think it's important that a lot of these small vendors that we go to in our local town here actually see that we want to use it, because they need to see that there are people coming who want to use it. So yeah, it's just our fun like thing.
No, I find it really great that you guys, I mean, if I can may call you like Bitcoin missionaries, I mean, you know, with really seriously, I mean, without you people there wouldn't be like any, you know, encouragement, empowerment, you know, but we need to really, it's not only education, it's like, you know, being, what do you call it? Like with your passion and, you know, your vision and your ethos, it's something more emotional, I think, what people need to feel. And it's like the excitement also, yeah.
No, we're pretty excited about it when we talk.
Definitely. Yeah. So, hey, anything else we should mention, or you can, you know, plug in your whatever website, blog, handle.
Follow our social channels. Yeah. That would always be appreciated. Every Monday we do a live YouTube, and we basically, it's incredibly simple, very low production. We just talk about what we did for the week, but we often talk about things that have happened. So we talk about the 180 day visa, or we talk about how many Bitcoin Bukele has bought. And,
or if there's been a, you know, an issue we've had with the Bitcoin,
purchasing,
our experiences. So we, you know, can talk about that, or if you've solved a problem or found a, you know, so
great. What's the name of the channel, or where is it? Is it on your Twitter handle?
So everything is NJ El Salvador. So Nikki and James El Salvador.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got the YouTube,
Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah. And then we do have a website. We do sell a ebook just on how to, it's sort of moving to El Salvador and sort of, you know,
tips that we wish we had.
Yeah. Tips we wish we had, really.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Because we've been here for 11 months, so we're nearly at the 1 year mark.
And we're also trying to put together education on and a list of books that people should read, but it all takes time.
So it's
great. I mean, yeah, thank you for letting us share our social handles and what we do there.
Well, thank you for, you know, really appreciate it. Really enjoyed our talk, and it's really inspirational. Thank you so much again for all your work you do, and who knows, we might see each other. As I already mentioned, we could, you know, I mean, we don't have any plans right now, but I think in, let's say, in 6 to 12 months we could have like more concrete plans, and we need to come over, you know, to El Salvador and really experience it for ourselves, and get in touch with you guys and other, you know, families and people from around the world, Canada, New Zealand, and we have, you know, our own like vision and mission, what we would want to do over there, but you know, the fundamental rights or I don't know, basic human rights, you know, these need to be protected, whether it be property rights or knowing that, you know, you're just free to homeschool your children, not being, you know, jabbed by force or anything. It's and everything else, you know, in El Salvador could just come to fruition, would it be, you know, technological evolution or new infrastructures. I think it's El Salvador could even, because we always say, you know, and sort of a similar something to Singapore or other, I think it's going to be something very special, right? Because when I think of, you know, Singapore or Dubai, whatever, it's like, I don't know, it's the feeling is not really great, because I've been to some of these countries, and I think it's the, like, how can you really live there? Like, is it really about freedom, quality of life? So all these things, all these properties that make a life worthwhile.
They're fiat citadels, and they come with fiat challenges. And I'm looking forward to the Bitcoin Citadel here. Just on your comment about possibly visiting, November is an excellent time. The reason I mentioned is because you've got adopting BTC. It was our first one last year, and we recommend it. It was a very high signal event, and it's testament to the great things that are happening here.
Oh, great to know. Thanks.
Okay, awesome.
Thank you, James. Thanks so much, and have a great time. I hope I'll see you soon again.
Okay. Great. Well, you know where we are.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye bye.